Love music. Live sport. The Lineout with Lewis Stewart on Rock Sport Radio.
Evening, Wednesday evening. That means it's time for me, Lewis Stewart, with this week's edition of The Lineout, your guide to all things going on in Scottish rugby. Another busy show coming up, so no time to hang around with too much waffle. We're going to be looking at Glasgow in South Africa, Edinburgh after their first win, but remember they are heading for Dublin this weekend. A quick look at the club scene and the weekend's varsity match, all still to come. But where I plan to start is this week is with the rather controversial comments from Richard Cockerill, the Edinburgh coach, at the weekend after his side had beaten Connaught 17-10 at Murrayfield, their first win of the season. He has obviously been aching to say this stuff for quite some time. But on the other hand, I think he has also felt that it would have looked like whinging if he had done it on the back of a loss. But he is very unhappy about the quality of refereeing that he is seeing this season. He hasn't had the delights of getting the likes of Nigel Owens in charge of any of the Edinburgh games yet, so that he feels that the referees that they have been getting... Don't forget, that does include the likes of John Lacey, who is supposed to be an international referee, have been rather below the standard that he would like, and certainly below the consistency that he thinks the teams demand. He was very controversial immediately after the game, sort of saying that the refereeing standards damaged the credibility of the whole tournament. When I caught up with him a few days later, I then started asking him if he had been in touch with the Pro 14 Refs Chief Greg Gardner since that comment after the game.
I sent some footage for him to have a look at. I spoke to him on Saturday morning and about a few things, and so the last 2 weeks there was a lot of agreement in some of the decisions. As a coaching, all the coaches, all the DORs or head coaches get sent a video on a Thursday of what the referees have been told to look out for, and what I saw on Thursday from the footage to what I saw on Friday night is completely different. So the biggest thing for me is that, a bit like anybody, is that so Greg's the head of the Pro 14 referees. He reports into managers who then manage their referees. So they're all, obviously it's very difficult and very complex, whereas in France or in England there's one boss who deals with all the referees, so you're very direct with the communication. So and ultimately the referees aren't employed by the Pro 14 either, they're employed by the unions. So it makes it a little bit complicated, doesn't it? But there has to be some consistency across the refereeing group in this competition, and has to be correct, doesn't it?
So are you complaining about consistency, competency, or both?
I think obviously there's a bit of both, but you know, we had John Lacey, who was very referee very differently to Stuart Berry, for example. At some point, which has been asked for, certainly, you know, we met last year as coaches with Greg Garner, and this year I think all the coaches would like to sit in a room with the referees and Greg actually tell us how the game's going to be refereed at in all those parts of the game, because the breakdown from one week to the other is very different from referee to referee. I mean, very different. So I get it, because you've got an Irishman or a Welshman or a South African, you know, there's going to be differences slightly, but they're poles apart, aren't they, at the moment? It's got to be better, hasn't it? Because there's errors happening that are costing points on the league table. It is what it is, and you have to make the best of it. And if that, whatever funding that needs to have, it needs to have, doesn't it? And you have to have the want to do it.
And are you saying that one answer might be to directly employ the referees in the Pro 14 rather than sort of a second hand?
potentially. I don't know all the answers. All I know is what I see on game day, which hasn't been, in my opinion, hasn't been consistent enough or good enough at this point.
How much do you think part of the problem is that the assistant referees are not getting involved as much as they should be? Possibly because one of them is from the same country as the home team, and that raises obvious concerns of potential for bias.
You'll have to speak to Greg around it. Like, you know, there's we have a referee from a neutral country, one assistant referee who is from the same country, and one local who's on the other side, and a local doing the TMO. But we don't have Scottish referees anymore because we have neutral referees.
Richard Cockle there, reflecting on his comments about the quality of refereeing in the Pro 14. And I've got to admit, I do think that he has a point that, on the whole, it is not just necessarily the quality of the individual referees in each individual game, but, as he says, with so many referees drawn from so many countries, there is absolutely nothing resembling consistency from one game to another, that you have to know well in advance which referee you're going to get and how he is going to referee the game, and you're going to have to change your game substantially between one week and the other simply to accommodate the different referee. If you've got, say, for example, Stuart Berry coming in from South Africa and then George Clancy coming up the next week, there is going to be absolutely no resemblance whatsoever with the way the two of them actually referee something like the breakdown, and, you know, what counts as going over the top and what counts as hanging onto the ball, and so on and so forth. In the meantime, of course, Cockerill does have the slight issue, the minor matter, of trying to prepare his team to head out to Dublin, where they will be facing the double European and Pro 12 champions from last season, Leinster. I don't know yet, it won't be announced until probably Friday, what Leinster team is going to be put out. But it's usually about this time of year that the Irish teams start wheeling out all their big guns, the Johnny Sextons, the Gary Ringroses, the Devon Toners, and all those sort of guys back into the Leinster team. So it could actually be Leinster absolutely flat out preparing for Europe that he is taking on. It is going to be a difficult time for him, a difficult game for Edinburgh, so I asked him how he was looking forward to it.
It's going to be a good challenge for us, isn't it? So, look, we've got to play him sometime. We've got to go there, and we're going to go and throw everything at them and see where we get to. It's something for nothing in some regards for us, because nobody will expect us to win. We pushed them close there last year, and probably a little bit unlucky not to get to anything out of the game. So look, they're a good side. They've got a great win at the weekend. It's going to be a tough afternoon or tough evening for us, but this one we look forward to. Look, we're playing big teams in Europe, and Leinster are the best team in Europe, best squad in Europe, and we've got to go there and we've got to go and give it a bash. This is a new dynamic for us, in the fact that last year in those European weeks we could almost rest our squad. Was it's going to get harder? You know, we were at London Irish and Krasnyar this time last year. So, it's exciting for us, and it's something that we need to embrace to make sure that we know the level that we need to play at. So, look, we've got a good training week. We've got a slightly longer week, and we'll use that well. And we go to Dublin with an attitude to go and put it out there and see where we get to. How realistic that is, we'll see, but we'll certainly give it a good crack.
Is it almost a Champions Cup rehearsal for you?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, there'll be some changes in the squad. We've got a deep squad, and we need to give guys opportunities, so there'll be some changes to the squad. But we're going there, not to fulfill a fixture, we're going there to get some points out of the game, because any points, as we've seen in the competition, the competition's going to be bloody tight, isn't it? So, as we saw with Ulster at the weekend, got pushed hard. Scarlets got pushed exceptionally hard. Cardiff, got beaten away from home by the Italians, by Zebra. So anybody can get beaten, can't they? So it's going to be tight, and every point will count.
So what has to improve if you stand a chance?
I think some of our execution has to be a little bit better. I think we're slowly getting there. Our game's building slowly. When we get set piece opportunities, we need to take them, and we fluffed a few of those on Friday. It's also I thought we did some good stuff that we didn't get a reward from. so we'll get back to referee chat again. But I expect Leinster to play more, which makes the game more open, and it creates opportunities for both sides. I think both sides will want to play on Friday night or Saturday even, so that helps. I suppose I'll take it as a backhanded compliment that Connacht came almost not to play until they were out of the game, and just make it as difficult as possible for us rather than playing. So, but that's we've got to improve our parts. We can talk about all the other parts around officiating, but the key parts are that we need to do things better. And if we had done, the two previous results may have been different as well. That's all our responsibility. We're slowly getting there, and there's guys like Bergen to start, and Ford and Dell, along with Daryl Marfo as well, who hasn't featured this year so far. There's obviously Vili Mata that didn't play at the weekend. Obviously John Barkley to come back in, Magnus Bradbury who's just coming back to fitness. So there's some good bodies to come back in, Louis Carmichael as well. So there's some really good young fellas there as well. I think Jamie Rich has played really well the last two games. Crosby's to come into that forward pack as well, who's done really well. So no, it's something to build on, and it's part of the evolution of this squad as well. This squad's not as remodeled as I'd like it to be moving forward, but we're 14, 15 months into this project that's 4 or 5 years old, so we need to keep evolving that over the next 12, 24 months, and this squad will get better.
Richard Cockerill, with a degree of optimism about their chances out at Leinster. It was something of a breakthrough game for them last season. They lost and they didn't even pick up a bonus point, but they did put in the kind of performance that Cockerill had been looking for ever since he arrived at the club, and in many ways it was a bit of a breakthrough for them. And of course, as you picked up in that interview, he has always been pointing out that regardless of the refereeing and regardless of the officiating, that if the players had actually played to their potential in the first two games of this season, then they would have won those matches. So you can imagine that there was huge relief amongst the players when they did eventually get their first win of the season last weekend in beating Connacht 17-10, although I must admit I reckon they played better the week before when they lost to Ulster to a last minute penalty from John Cooney. But it is a result driven business, as we all know, and so for all the comments you hear about people saying that you look about after the performances and the results will look after themselves, the result did actually matter, as centre James Johnson explained.
Confidence levels were always pretty positive, even when we got those narrow losses, but I think underlying it was just important to get the win at the weekend there, so, and we did that, so the vibe's still good, the vibe's still positive going forward. Certainly helps with building a little bit of momentum coming into this week, so it's important to get that win and gives us a bit confidence coming in on Saturday.
You probably wouldn't want it to happen this way, but Mark Bennett's hamstring injury opens up an opportunity for you, doesn't it?
Obviously a great player, and he's had a bit of bad luck with injuries in the last couple of years, so really gutted for him because he was starting to come into his own a little bit more, so really disappointed him that happened, but if the opportunity arises for me, that's great, but on a personal note for him, it's obviously devastating in regards to that.
This time last year, you were expecting to play a lot of sevens. Here you are, settling into the 15 side. How much have you enjoyed the changeover and how did it happen?
Yeah, just didn't really expect the season to pan out the way it did. I thought I'd really sort of be back into the sevens come November, December time when that kicked off, but just the opportunity arose and I managed to take a few of my opportunities in the games I played, so I was delighted to get a few games under my belt and show that I can play 15s at this level. Didn't really think about the 15s at all, really. I didn't really ever get too many opportunities, so for Cockers to sort of give me the chance and show what I could do was a surprise. He sort of just said that, look, there's going to be opportunity here possibly to play. I want to see what you can do, and sort of just take it step by step. It wasn't really you're in for the sort of season. It was sort of take it sort of short term. We bring you in and see how you get on. And to be honest, I wasn't really expecting to play when he gave me my first opportunity to play, which was Leinster away last year. It was a bit of a surprise when they named the team that time, so I wasn't really expecting it. So when he gave me that opportunity and managed to play fairly well, so, and then I think that just sort of confirmed to him I could play at the level.
What would have happened to you, do you think, if the Sevens opportunity hadn't come along?
I wouldn't have probably been continuing playing rugby, to be honest. I think the Sevens was at the time I moved across there, I think it just sort of gave me a new sort of lease of life and allowed me to play and enjoy playing at the time.
But how much of a turning point was that Leinster game last season, both for you personally and for the team? So it was probably your first really good performance at the time.
Yeah, no, it was great to get the performance out there last year. I know we lost, but there was a lot to take from that. I think we took a lot of confidence from that. There was a few changes in the team, I think I remember rightly, but no, I think it stood us in good stead because we knew we can compete with the best teams. So I think that gave us confidence going forward and belief in ourselves a little bit more.
James Johnson there, talking about his Sevens career and about his optimism. They head out to Leinster this weekend on the basis of what they achieved out in Leinster last season, which I was saying before the interview, really was probably their first really solid performance after Cockerell took over the club. Now, Johnson, for those of you who don't know, is another one that came off the production line at Currie. And he later on has been joined in the Edinburgh squad by Luke Crosby, who has come through the system at Currie and who I have on the line to talk about how the Edinburgh squad is now feeling as they look into it. Good evening, Luke. It's been a good start to the season for you, but must have been quite frustrating from the point of view of the players.
Yeah, obviously. Firstly, it's Luke Hamilton, not Crosby, which is going to be a bit awkward.
Oh, sorry. Wrong Luke. I was misled.
It's been a frustrating start to the season, but obviously we've had those three games. We obviously beat Connacht last weekend, and the other two we probably should have won, so there's plenty of positives to take, but still a lot to work on.
Well, look, I was hoping to get you on a couple of weeks ago, as you'll remember, that great to have you on now. Can you talk me through how you came to be at Edinburgh? Because, you started off in Wales, where I believe you were born, and then you ended out at Leicester, and then you ended out at Edinburgh. Talk me through the process.
Yeah, so started originally with Scots Academy at 16 and then 18. Then I moved to Cardiff Blues, where I spent the next 4 years. And probably my last year, I probably stopped enjoying my rugby a bit. So I thought it was time for a change. So I ended up spending 2 years in the south of France, in Argent, which I thoroughly enjoyed, loved those 2 years. And then I ended up moving to Leicester with obviously Rich Cockerell at the time there. And then spent the 2 years there, and I came to the end of my contract, obviously having played for Scotland the previous season. To me, it was spoke to Cockers, and it was an easy choice for me, really. To obviously, he wanted me to come up here, and I jumped at the opportunity.
It must have been quite flattering. Cockerell, who had obviously known you at Leicester, that was one of the first players that he was looking to. In fact, he went back to you once he joined Edinburgh.
Yeah, obviously, I didn't have too much time with him at Leicester, but we spent 6 months probably together in Leicester, and I thoroughly enjoyed my time underneath him. So for him to come back and still want me to play, obviously, it's nice as a player. But I'd say the easy bit's done now. It's trying to impress him again, a new club and new challenges.
Yes, but you have played in all the games so far, which presumably means you're due for a rest sometime soon, as I believe the international protocols have it. Hoping to play against Leinster this weekend?
From my point of view, I want to play every week. In my opinion, I'd rather play every week. I think it's good to play as much as you can. So for me, I'm quite happy to keep going along. I don't need a rest. I'm still young, so I don't need a rest at the moment. So if I am picked this again, I'd be more than happy to play, and I'm feeling good, feeling fresh, so I'm ready to go.
But your career with Scotland couldn't have got off to a more frustrating start. I mean, there you were. You came on the field for your first cap. You got a couple of good carries. You were looking good. You were looking as though you were enjoying it. And then suddenly it all went pear-shaped. That must have been one of the highest and lowest moments of your career within sort of 10 minutes of each other.
Yeah, it was probably a really weird week for me because obviously I came into the squad for those November tests and didn't really expect to play. And then obviously that New Zealand week, I was named in the squad. It was a bit of a weird week, really. It went so quickly and I didn't really have to take anything in, which was probably quite good. And then obviously Hamish went off with a bad back 20 minutes in, which didn't really give me any time. So the next thing you know, I was straight on the field. I thoroughly enjoyed the odd minutes that I played, and obviously the way it ended, bitterly disappointed. It was a weird day, emotional. Obviously, it's great to get your first cap to your country, but then to come off in the manner I did, waiting for scans and results, I also had that side of the game to deal with as well. So it was a bit of a weird day in all and all, but at the end, it wasn't too bad. So I thoroughly enjoyed that day. It was a great day.
Well, nevertheless, the ankle kept you out for a while. Did you worry at any stage in the proceedings that that might actually, you know, that keep you going, keep you out for longer, in the sense that, you know, that once you're out of sight, that you might be forgotten again?
With my ankle, I just wanted to get back playing. I know if you can play well for your club, you're always in the shop window. I know it's a bit more difficult being there as well at the time, but for me, it was just trying to get back and trying to get fit as quickly as possible. And selection then is out with your hands. You've just got to try and do what you do for the club you're playing for, and if you're picked, that's great, that's brilliant. Obviously you have those challenges, but if you're not, you've just got to keep improving your game, and hopefully you'll get another opportunity.
And how much did that needing to keep yourself in the shop window, how much did that play a role in your decision to come to Scotland?
Well, obviously I played for Scotland, so then I was capped, so it made sense from everyone's point, myself, it made sense to come up here and play rather than be in England, especially as the international boys up here are looked after better, as both clubs are owned by the FIU. So that's quite good from that point of view. And obviously he's up here, great playing with the boys week in, week out, that you might get an opportunity to play with at test level.
Yes, and as you say, you do get looked after. But on the other hand, when you came into that Edinburgh squad and looked at the back row competition around, that must have given you a little bit of hesitation.
Yeah, obviously it does. Back row here is probably, there's a lot of competition for back row. If you look all across the board, there's Hamish, there's Bill, there's Jamie, there's Maggie, there's Luke Crosby, there's loads of back row, and it's a difficult spot to get into. But then I'd say with the competition, it obviously drives everyone and hopefully you get a chance to put your best foot forward. And when you do get an opportunity, you need to play well, because there's someone biting at your heels trying to take the shirt off you every week.
Absolutely, and you started the season pretty well, so you must be quite pleased with your own performances and the way things have gone so far.
Yeah, it's gone okay so far from my point of view, and there's still a lot I need to work on. I still feel I can do a lot more. I'm just trying to play as much as I can, and I know at the moment I've got the shirt, but there's boys pecking on my heels every single week trying to take it off me, which for me is saves my game and drives me forward as well.
And finally, of course, that your family, you're not actually sounding terribly Welsh on the phone at the moment, but you were born and brought up in Wales. But your family, I believe, is originally from Stirling. Talk me through how, you know, that happened.
So my father was born and bred in Stirling. His mum and dad, also my grandparents, were from Stirling as well. And I had a lot of family up here when I was younger, and a lot of them now have passed away or moved closer to Wales, because obviously my dad was down there when he was young. He lived up here till he was 8 or 9, and then they decided to, for certain reasons, move down to Wales for quite a life, and they've come up on family holidays ever since I was young, and it's always been an option for me. I've always wanted to play for Scotland, and when it came to in November, the dream come true, I think, for not just me, but my family as well.
But as I understand, the deepest West Wales, sort of Haverford West, neck of the woods, is that right?
Yeah, Pembroke, just a bit further down from Haverford West, so my accent's not too strong.
Yeah, so well, they all speak Welsh down there, so it's a miracle you can speak English at all, really.
Pandles don't actually speak any Welsh at all, I'd say. I'd say there's not many people in Pandles that speak Welsh.
Right. So no, it's fair enough. So, yes, I thought, yeah, Cardigan, neck of the woods, yes. A bit further north, possibly, yes. But, yes, you were saying that had you always wanted to play for Scotland, or was Wales your first ambition and sort of you changed your mind?
To be honest with you, I never thought I'd get anywhere near international rugby, if I'm being totally honest with you. I just was trying to play as long as I could and trying to make a career out of it. And obviously when I left, I was in that 40, I kind of thought I was done totally with international rugby. I obviously had both options and wanted to play international rugby. But when I left there, it kind of almost gave up on it. And I never really thought about it. And obviously until Tegger called me in November, which was a bit of a shock for me. And then obviously he called me and it was an opportunity that I could turn down to play for my country. And hopefully I'll get another opportunity one day to do it again.
Well, yes, because, as you say, your first cap against the All Blacks, which they don't come much bigger than that. And then caps, of course, in the summer on that summer tour. You must have quite enjoyed that.
Yeah, I totally enjoyed the summer tour. It was great. Just a bit disappointed in my performances against the USA, but that happens. So for me, that ate me alive through the whole summer, how that game went and how it finished, and obviously to come off injured. So it was it's been a difficult summer. It was a long wait till the first game of the season, because I felt a lot to prove, because I felt I let myself down a bit in that game. But it's still a massive honour to play. I was just disappointed in how I played again in my first start, which is still eating me alive now.
So hoping that you get another go this November, obviously.
Oh, obviously, it'd be great to do that, but at the moment, my concentration is just where I'm trying to play as much as I can and trying to play well for the team and contribute on and off the field. And then little things like that take care of itself. You've got no control in it. You just put your best foot forward and go from there.
And just finally, before I let you go, this weekend, obviously, Leinster, European champions, amongst other things. How much is this, do you think, a chance for you to get a taste of playing at that top European level before you actually get back into the Champions Cup for the first time and head out to Montpellier?
I think it's massive. Probably get much bigger than the champions in their own backyard. Especially, I reckon they'll go full strength this week, because I don't think they have yet this season. They've kind of mixed the match. So for us as a team, it's good preparation for Europe, but it doesn't get much bigger than playing them in their own backyard. And obviously, we need to perform. We've done okay, I'd say, so far in our away games, but this is probably our biggest challenge yet, going out there. And obviously, everything that surrounds the fixture, with it, them being at home and them being the champions, it's added incentive for us.
Add incentive for you, and hopefully you will do it. Luke, thank you very much indeed. Sorry for the mix-up at the beginning.
No worries, that's fine.
Okay, speak to you again soon. Thanks a lot.
Cheers, thank you.
Bye. Thanks a lot. Cheers. Luke Hamilton there, not, as I said at the beginning, Luke Crosby. Wires completely crossed with all sorts of things. I'm going to go for an ad break now. I will be back afterwards with stuff from Glasgow.
Love music. Live sport. The Lineout with Lewis Stewart on Rock Sport Radio.
Welcome back to The Line Out. Before the break, I was talking about Edinburgh and to Edinburgh about all sorts of things, including their game this weekend out in Dublin against Leinster. On to Glasgow Warriors now, who of course are still in South Africa. Last weekend they beat the Cheetahs by an impressive sounding 52-24 in Bloemfontein. But really the big news to come out of that game was not so much the result, but the injuries before and during the match. So when we caught up with Kenny Murray over the phone from South Africa, that was where we started, beginning with what is happening with Stuart Hogg, who missed the match after, as you will hear, damaging his ankle against Munster.
No, we just thought he got that foot injury really early on in the Munster game. I don't know if you recall. So we thought just a week or so he'd be able to recover from it. But It's just still giving him obviously a few problems, so we thought we'd better risk him, get him back and get it scanned, obviously see how it goes to find out if indeed there's anything wrong or if he needs any kind of further treatment. One of these ones, it was a bit innocuous thing, and early on, it was just one of these things a bit sore early on, but, you know, we got medical treatment at the time, and, you know, as far as it was concerned, it was all right, it was good to continue and play. Just after it, obviously, he started to feel a bit of pain in it. But it's one of these things, there might be nothing wrong, he just needs a couple of weeks to recover from it, or it might be something that needs tidied up. So, again, as I said, he's getting a scan today, so we should find out at some point today, later on today, the extent of injury. And again, it may not be anything, as I said, but we obviously, for us and for Scotland, want to get him scanned quickly just in case there is anything.
So that's the position on Stuart Hogg. Now to clarify the position with Brian Andonese, the big second row, who has been seen in the vicinity of Toulon, and according to the French press, he was there on trial.
At the end of the day, he's not on trial where anybody's injured at the moment, as you know. He's not played for a while. He's obviously out of contract next season, but, you know, as far as we're concerned at the moment, he's in contract with us this season, although he's not played, so he's obviously, you know, one of these things that he'll be looking at different options, but he's certainly not able to run about and play at the moment on trial, whether he's, you know, so just looking at different options, and we're obviously still in discussion with him at the moment, so at the end of the day we can't comment, but now he's at the moment until further sort of information. We are definitely speaking to him, and again, he's one of the Gatland. Most players are out of contract in the coming season, so they're just looking at different options. As I said, he's not running about, he's not trialling, so he's certainly not the word expression we'd be using. Yeah, I mean, obviously our main priority at the moment is to get him back in the pitch. As I said, he's been out for a lengthy period of time last year and again this year, which is obviously been difficult for us because we've had obviously Tim Swinson injured and obviously Kieran McDonald's put us under a lot of pressure. But you know, he started training on anti-gravity machines and doing a fair bit of work in that recently. So, you know, again, we're not able to give an exact date of when he'll be back playing. You know, we would have hoped it would be weeks rather than months that he'd be available to play. So, again, we'll just have to wait and see.
Kenny Murray on Brian Alanurezi, the big Samoan lock. Next, he moves on to the situation with Xander Fagerson.
It was a good win at the weekend, but obviously that's the gloss off it a lot, getting a player injured like that. So Xander has a fracture, obviously a lower leg fracture on the ankle. So he is coming to Cape Town, or he's arriving in Cape Town as we speak, so he'll join back up the squad. And he will stay with the squad until we fly home after the Kings game. So he's had excellent medical care in South Africa here. He got his operation. When he gets back home, he'll go for further scans and with the appropriate medical staff there. And then that will let us know the extent of, you know, how long he's been out for. So can't put a time on it at the moment, to be honest with you, but obviously, likelihood is it's going to be months rather than weeks. But can't put an exact time in it until they get seen again by medics when we get back to Scotland. So honestly, it's one of these really bloody innocuous injuries. I don't know if you've seen it, but just the opposition player swung round and caught him just as he was involved in a contact. So it was a really innocuous one, but again, it's a fracture in the lower leg, and for a big man like that as well, you know, he's obviously a big man. It takes a lot of time to recover, but as I said, he's had a really successful operation, and we'll just need to wait and see. We'll find out more next week when he sees the medical folk in Glasgow and get a bit more of an idea of how long it might be. But, you know, with an injury like that, it's definitely going to be, say, close to months rather than weeks.
Kenny Murray, the Glasgow defence coach, talking about the finishing off with the stuff about Xander Fagerson, the title prop, who, as you heard, has broken his ankle. On the whole, ankle injuries tend to be 3-4 months, so we are probably looking at maybe the new year. With a bit of luck, it won't rule him out of the Six Nations, but I'm pretty sure it's going to rule him out of the autumn test, although we will hear more about it when he gets back to Scotland next week. On the other side of the equation, Ryan Wilson didn't start the game, but we believe that he is going to be able to return this week. Let's hear from the man himself about what happened.
Yeah, I had a bit of illness, but no, I'm good now. I've had a week to get over it, so maybe could have pushed it for the weekend there. So So no, I'm all good. I'm all good to go.
Ryan Wilson talking about his return to health there. Next question was to ask him about how important these longer trips away are for the bonding and the unity within the squad.
It's really good. You know, we got away a little bit in pre-season, but to get something else, you know, a two-week trip away over in South Africa with the whole squad is definitely something we can use. We're a pretty close group already, so no, it's important to try and get the boys away. And you know, we've got plenty of things off field that we've got planned with the boys, that we've all, you know, gone out for dinners and stuff. And we're in Cape Town at the moment, and it's a brilliant city to be in. Yeah, it's definitely beneficial, you know, to get the boys away together. And you know, you can sometimes, because you're all together, the team's there, the coaches can take advantage of it and overdo it with meetings, etc. But we've had a really good balance. I think Dave's pretty familiar with Cape Town, and he's said, you know, what a beautiful place it was. Ollie Kebble's from here, and so a few of the boys know a bit about it. So we said it was important to go somewhere that we could enjoy. You know, we want to make sure we get to work and do our job. You know, we've got Kings, which will be a tough game. They did very well against Ulster, so we've got our mind focused on rugby when we're on the field, but we've got a big emphasis that when we're off it, we've got a chance to bond as a squad. And you know, we wanted to be in a good place to do that, so Cape Town's definitely a pretty cool city. And then we moved down to Port Elizabeth on Friday, I believe, getting ready for the game down there. It's pretty good, but like I said, we're training hard. And that's a big focus for the boys. But you know, when we get that downtime, we've got to enjoy it, because it's just like being at home. You know, you when you finish training, you're off, and you know, you're with your family or with friends or with the boys outside of rugby. So it's important to replicate that when you're away. You can't just solely focus on rugby for 2 weeks, because it'll drive you crazy.
Ryan Wilson, the Glasgow co-captain, on his health and on the delights of a week in Cape Town, where I am assured they are working very, very hard on their rugby, as well as bonding and having a good time. It's a lovely place to go, and I'm sure they're having a lot of fun as well as doing a lot of work. Well, that's it from the pro side. The other big event this week is going to be at Murrayfield, where the various students from Edinburgh and St Andrews will be there for a whole host of games revolving around what they are claiming to be, or what they're marketing as, the varsity match. Of course, it's the Scottish equivalent of the big Oxford-Cambridge thing that they have down Twickenham and have had for a number of years. Those of you who are regular listeners will remember I spoke to Scott Lawson, the St Andrews coach, last week. So in the interest of balance, I think we need to talk to David Adamson, the Edinburgh coach, about how his lot is going. It's interesting times for David. The last time, as I pointed out to him, that I actually ran into him was when he was coaching Stirling County. And I did wonder how he had gone from there to where he is now.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I was at. Well, I played at Stirling, so I played all my kind of, a lot of my youth rugby at Stirling. And I was at. I went to Dollar, so I played at the school first team, and I went back to Stirling when I left school. Then I finished playing about 9 years ago, and then that's when I started with the university. I was just kind of right place, right time. I studied PE teaching at university, and then when I finished playing, the job at the university came up. So that was about 2010, 2011. So did that for 4 years, and the job at Stirling came up. John Wright became president, and I actually played with John so John Wright was retiring. Well, not retiring, but just him and Ian Jardine were kind of playing centre in their kind of last couple of years of playing. I was just starting, so I knew John through that. And then the university stuff wasn't really, it was going okay. We'd just been relegated, so I realised I had a bit more time. So I did the Stirling job for a couple of years. And then the university stuff just becoming a lot more successful. We got promoted into what's called Bucks Premier North A. And that's the second tier of the university rugby in the UK. And the closest away game was Newcastle. and I just wasn't able to commit the necessary time to Stirling because my job at the university is full time, and I just wasn't able to commit the necessary time for the club, what the club needed, what the players needed to kind of be to remain being successful and pushing on to their aspirations of kind of getting into the top four. So because Stirling County stuff was only, well, it was part time in name, but it was still taking up a lot of time. So I had to unfortunately step down, and that was 2 years. That was one year ago. This is the second season, and the university stuff again has just gone from strength to strength really again. So it's now, and so the start of the season. So last season was the first one I'd done after leaving Stirling. And then obviously this one's just coming up again, where it's hopefully going to go pretty well. So,
when you first started the job, then this game against St Andrews must have been a sort of fairly minor blip on your character, and here it is, one of the great events of the season, with sort of 10,000 people expected, and the Murrayfield pitch being laid out for you, and all the rest of it.
Yeah, it's great. So again, I think it was maybe 2012 or 2013. It got resurrected. Not maybe about 2011 actually. And it was myself and Dave Ross, who was director of rugby at St Andrews at the time. We just felt Scottish student rugby was missing something like a varsity game. We didn't really expect it to get to the size of the kind of traditional Oxford-Cambridge game, but we felt it was maybe something missing from the university rugby calendar. And it was just coincidentally, at the same time, London Scottish were getting promoted through the leagues. I think they were just about to go into the Championship, and they were looking to engage with a lot of the numbers of supporters in the southeast of England, and both universities have huge numbers of alumni in the southeast of England, and it just worked out really well for both universities in London Scottish. They held it for the first three or four years, and then I can't remember quite how it worked. I think we maybe just it was just kind of conversations. I think Graham Law, who's media marketing at Scottish Rugby, we spoke with him, and that's just kind of where it started. And it's just kind of grown from there, and we're hoping to build on the 10,000 spectators at the game for the men and the women's game on the main pitch on Saturday. So it does seem to be going from strength to strength, and the Scottish Rugby do a great job in supporting the event, as you say, getting to play in the main pitch at BT Monfield. So it's pretty good.
That's come at a slightly awkward time of year for you, though, because the students are only just arriving back after their summer holidays. Is it really basically last year's team that you're sort of hanging on to, or have you been able to bring in any new faces, or how does it work?
Yeah, I think there's most kind of varsities. So there's one in Newcastle, between Newcastle and Northumbria. There's a couple that happen in Wales. There's Loughborough played Durham, I can't remember, but there's a lot of them are at the end of the season. But we felt the timing was quite good, so it was a good way of engaging with the new students, like all the first years that are arriving at the university. And it's a good way for them to get to see a huge, like an exciting university event at BT Murrayfield, but then also engage with the other sports clubs, because there's other sports going on. There's a thing called Capital versus Kingdom, where I think about another 20-25 sports play earlier in the day. Then the kind of tagline is all roads lead to BT Murrayfield.
And this year's a wee bit different because you've got the whole gamut of it. It's not just the sort of main men's game, you've got the women's and all sorts of other things going on as well.
Our women's team are particularly strong. I think the last kind of 2 or 3 years have been one of the best teams in the UK, and I know this year they've kind of lost a few players to graduation, but that's just the nature of university rugby and sport, I guess. And our seconds and thirds, we always tend to be stronger down at that level, just purely because of numbers. We're a bigger university, and we have a lot of, for example, we had over 200 first years sign up to the rugby club, and we had over 100 at our first 100 new players at our first training session last week. So it's a numbers game when you get down there. But in terms of players, we have lost quite a few to graduation from last year, but the quality, because we're in the Bucks Premier A, and the facilities and the coaching that we're able to offer students, our recruitment is, again, it's probably one of the best kind of 2 years that we've had in terms of recruiting players. And then we're now getting players from South Africa, Australia. We're getting a lot of the great, really good young players from Premiership academies down south. and I guess the next step is just to start engaging with a lot of the Scottish students who are at the university, which is one thing we probably miss out a bit on. So, but it's we're pretty happy with where we're going.
Sounds like you're outright favourites to win fairly comfortably then.
We never won. We're always confident. We've had a great pre-season and we had a good day. We played Northumbria in the first hit out of the pre-season. They finished second in the overall UK, and we did pretty well against them. And we played Glasgow and Strathclyde, who are two of the, I guess, in terms of league placings, the next best two Scottish universities. And we beat them. Well, our seconds beat Strathclyde, and our first team in Glasgow failed, well, pretty convincingly. So, but you just never know. It's a one-off game. It's a cup final, and St Andrews are always up for it. And they've kind of had the beating over the past, well, over the past 5 years. They've won it four times. We've won it once. So it's, I guess, just stats and numbers and all that kind of stuff goes out the window in these kind of games, I guess. So.
And Scott Lawson, of course, will make a difference, bringing at least professional, sort of experience to their organisation, if nothing else.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I've met Scott a few times, so since he's taken on the role, and he seems really enthusiastic. And as you say, just with all his expertise, and he's been at Newcastle, Gloucester, he's at the Warriors, he's at London Irish for a bit as well. Just having experience of working with all these top coaches in these kind of environments is only good. And I think it won't just be good for St Andrews, I think it'll be good for student rugby in Scotland as well, because anything that raises the profile and raises the standard of rugby is a good thing. And it's something that I know I'm really keen to do, and always promoting the student game in Scotland, and having somebody Scott's calibre and experience in the game will only help it, I guess, and drive it forward further.
Thank you very much indeed, David. I've got to confess here that I'm old St Andrews myself, so I can't wish you the best of luck, but good luck anyway.
I've got my cousin and my granddad are both at St Andrews as well, so I do have a wee soft spot for them, but not so much the rugby club.
Not for 80 minutes on Saturday anyway.
No, not for 80 minutes, absolutely. No, but that's, yeah.
David Adamson, the Edinburgh University head coach there, talking about the varsity game at Murrayfield on Saturday. And I should point out, for those who care about such historic things, that in fact, the Scottish varsity match, in the sense that St Andrews playing against Edinburgh University, does actually predate the English version. Another first for Scotland there. They started playing in about 1860. The two clubs, off the top of my head, were founded in 1857 and 1858, and it wasn't long before they were playing matches against each other. They were instrumental in the early history of Scottish rugby. They were instrumental in the first game against England in 1871. So there is a lot of history packing down there alongside the rugby activities on Saturday afternoon at Murrayfield. Whole day of rugby. If you're interested, there's things going on in the backfield. There's women's games as well as men's games. Should be a good day out. Turning very, very quickly to the club scene, I was at Glasgow Hawks at their new ground in Balgray at the weekend, where I saw them actually manage somehow or other to lose a game that they really looked as though they should have been winning to Barrymuir. Afterwards, I caught up with Peter Wright, the Barrymuir coach, to ask him about how on earth his team managed to be 7 points behind with something like 2 minutes left and yet come away with a win.
You know, it's about momentum, isn't it? The game's about momentum, and we had it in the first 20 minutes. We had a wee bit at the start of the second half, and that was pretty much it. They had all their momentum. They were putting a lot of width on the game, which surprised us a wee bit. I mean, obviously with the wingers that they had in the first half, they were going to play, but we were our own worst enemies at times. We were defending really well in the first half, and we'd turn them over, and we'd get one phase and drop it, or we'd kick the ball away straight away. So little things like that. We've talked about keeping ball, and I suppose we showed that in the very last play of the game. We kept it for 30 odd phases, yeah, and to then get the penalty, and then I thought they were going to kick it, but they kicked it in the corner and had the ability to catch and drive and score. So it's the best way to win and the worst way to lose, because you can't come back for it, and that's always quite tough. But I think for us it was an important win. The type of win was important, even though we didn't play that well. I thought it was important that we managed to find a way to win, because we've not done that in the past, and today we've managed to find a way. But you know what, we've got what's on is next week, we've got Edinburgh Accies the week after, we've got Ayrley, so there's tough games coming up, and we have to play way better than that to have any chance of winning these games.
But it's got to give you confidence, it's got to give the players confidence that they know they can find a way to win.
Yeah, I think that's the point we made. It's about finding ways, you know, it's about solving problems. And you know, when we got ourselves back into the game, and you know, little things like kickoffs, winning lineouts, scrums, you know, indiscipline there, gave away a silly penalty. So yeah, it's one of those. You're both teams will be disappointed in at certain times and aspects of the game, but ultimately it's finding that and find a way to win. And we've not been able to do that for 2 years, but today we found it. But you know, it's after today, the game's over, and we go on to next week building the World Watsonian, so local derby. So it's, but we'll enjoy the night. Well, the boys will enjoy it. They'll be pretty knackered, to be fair. I think they were all 30 guys on the pitch, were off their feet at that last play, and you know, testament to their defence as well. They battled away, and we kept the ball. They battled away, and ultimately we got the result, and sadly, didn't they?
Peter Wright talking about his team's escape at Glasgow Hawks. It must be said that Glasgow Hawks were completely the opposite view, that they couldn't quite work out how they had managed to lose the game, and feeling that the final penalty that actually turned it in Barry Muir's favour was one that should have gone to them, not the only refereeing controversy of the weekend. I'm afraid I had hoped to go on and talk to Peter Wright about why he is not going to be involved in the Super 6 coaching next season, but time has beaten me, so I'm going to have to hold that one over to next week. I will be back in a week's time with a special coming from the European Champions Cup launch at Dublin. I'm going over there for that, and we'll come back with hopefully lots of information, lots of interviews, and lots of news and views from that, as well as all the usual stuff from the various things that are going on at the weekend, including Edinburgh at Leinster and Glasgow at the Southern Kings. But yet again, the clock has beaten me for this week, so that's it from me. Good night.
Love music. Live sport. The Lineout with Lewis Stewart on Rock Sport Radio.